Welcome back to the best of women's fiction after our 1 month summer season break. Today, I'm joined by Cheryl Bizet-Boutte. Cheryl is a multidisciplinary writer whose work, while great storytelling, also gets across deeper meaning about the politics of economics and race. Her first novel, Betrayal on the Bayou, builds an immersive fictional universe set in Louisiana in the mid-1800s.
I'm excited because I'm here with a Bay Area writer, I believe, Cheryl Bizet-Boutte, Bizet-Boutte, I got that slightly wrong, is joining me today from, where are you, Cheryl?
I am with you from the Southeast Hills of Oakland, California, the home of the Ohlone, who had no word for war.
I've never heard that before. And I used to live in Ohlone area in the South Bay. There was a big park that had a lot of the history of the Ohlone explained there. And I never knew that.
Yeah. I am in the hills where they had their homes to and look down on the bay and all of the wonderful trees. And a lot of them, hopefully, as I look out my window, are still here, the ones that they looked at.
And you actually write a book that's set on the bayou, Betrayal. You wrote a book, your novel, Betrayal on the Bayou, which I had a chance to read during the last week here, is fabulous historical fiction. You do an amazing job of world building. I really felt like I was there and I was understanding the racial tensions and the difficulty of being kind of in different groups and how different groups weren't intermingling. And you just created this entire world that I felt like I was immersed in for the days that I was reading this novel.
Well, you know, I tried to build a world that, first of all, comes from my overly fruitful imagination, which I've always had and has always been my best friend, but also is connected to a little bit of teaching and providing information so that people could see graphically how people are divided and what happens when people are divided by color and race and how that impacts the rest of their lives and how they live.
I loved, for me, the explanation of kind of being Creole. And, you know, it's something that you read about in terms of, how do I explain this? Like, I love novels because they put you in a scenario and you get to live the character's life. And you did a fabulous job with this. And for me, even though I have a little bit of a French background and I know a little bit of the history of Creole and what happened in Louisiana, I just never understood it in the way I did reading this novel. You just did a wonderful job of putting me there.
Thank you so much. That's where my imagination combined with family lore took me. And it just kind of flowed. I started with Napoleon that I had been told by family members had a pretty significant role in my family's life in Louisiana and how it started there from way back in the 1600s, not just to the 1800s where the novel takes place. But along with that, setting the tone for how life was and trying to describe how people lived, I also wanted to make sure people understood that they were human beings who were characters and had their own agency. Whether the agency was good, bad, or indifferent, they had it. And I tried to describe that graphically as well.
So for those who are not familiar with Betrayal on the Bayou, maybe tell us a little bit about the book.
Well, it's really a story, as I said, that's from my imagination along with family lore that was built on a young man coming to Louisiana Territory in the 1800s, because he has to leave his home in France based on the fact that he has no real future there. He is a womanizer and has many bounties on his head. And his parents decide that he needs to go to the Louisiana Territory to not only save his life, but to build a life for himself and to have a respectable future. But in order for him to do that, he also needs to be married, because that is considered something that gives a person stability and makes them trustworthy. So he not only solicits, his father solicits a favor from Napoleon III, which is a letter of introduction for this young man to get him into the Society of Louisiana and to be accepted. They also find him a wife. And that is basically how this whole scenario starts. And the wife doesn't quite make it to the shores of Louisiana, but the young man does, with his infant daughter in tow.
And do you know the characters that appealed the most to me were the two women in Louisiana? So he ends up, remarrying, and there he remarries, but then he falls in love with another woman, and both his wife and, if you were to do the stereotype, the wife and the mistress are involved. But like both of them were so well portrayed. And those were the two characters of all of your characters in the book that I really related to the most.
Right.
To me, he kind of, and that's why I still consider this woman's fiction, because he served a purpose to get us to that scenario, but I felt like it was their story to me. But I'm interested in your perception. Like, is it all of their stories? Like, right. How do you see it?
It was written as their story. It is women's fiction, is their story. The man is incidental to the story, and his character places them where they are in the story, and he rolls out what happens to them in some ways eventually. But it is the two women, as you know, who weave through that story and their relationship with each other and other female characters as well that really make the story itself and build upon.
I agree. They're really memorable. Like those characters stuck with me.
Right. And I have to say that he has a wife, but the other woman is much more than a mistress. I think that, we conventionally use those terms, but I tried to convey that she not only was much more than that to him, in the end, and I won't give it away, she was also much less.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's not he's definitely a bit self-centered, and he's definitely using all of the women around him in various ways. But I loved how you portrayed, like she was very savvy about knowing what she was and wasn't getting out of the situation. She was going into it with her eyes somewhat open, right? And exactly. I liked that, because she wasn't portrayed as just, the weak mistress being taken advantage of. Like, she knew what she was getting into, and she saw the pros and cons. And I think that was very relatable in her character.
Well, once she was able to focus, because she went through some horrid experiences, she also was able to determine what it was she needed. And once she determined what she needed, she went out to get that. And then she was able to turn that into getting the things that she wanted. And that's what gave her agency.
I love that. And you said some of the inspiration came from Napoleon. What about the two women? Where did the inspiration for these great characters come from?
Those characters are built on hybrids of a lot of the women in my life who have been my heroes, my aunts, particularly my mother, my female cousins, some of whom are still in this world, thankfully, who didn't all live at that point in time. It wasn't necessary for me to use those existing characters in my life to build those women. Those women contain parts of all of the women I have known who have meant something to me.
And what does editing look like on a book like this? I think this is your debut novel, even though you've done a lot of writing. So what did the editing process look like?
Well, editing for me was kind of a slog. And I had to go out and get someone to help me edit the book, because I really couldn't do it very well. Now, let me say to you that I am a self-published independent author, and I don't turn my work over to editors, traditional editors, because I don't want my voice stepped on. And I find that a lot of people don't understand what I'm trying to say. And even in the editing process that I used, where I only wanted the person to correct the fact that I didn't know where to put commas and quotation marks, because I really didn't care about any of that stuff. When I'm writing, I just want to get my essence out. The person still had to say things to me like, oh, I can't believe that really happened, or who would do such a thing? Because they couldn't relate to the fact that, yes, some of those things really did happen. And even though they may sound unreal to you, they were real.
That's interesting. I didn't have any difficulty suspending credibility. Like, it happens, right? You read a novel and you're like, oh, it's really hard to suspend your credibility. This just, you know, you're trying to believe it, but it's too hard. I did not have that experience with this book. And, you know, maybe partly it's historical fiction. So like, hey, I did not live in the 1800s in Louisiana. So I'm obviously going to believe anything you tell me. In fact, I'm interested how much of this is based on real events and real life versus, I know the town is completely fictional, right? You made up the town and the valley that it's in, but like, talk to us about that. Like, how do you draw the line on where you care about adhering to history and where you're like, hey, it's fiction. I can do what I want.
I have to say that that's a difficult choice sometimes, but I'll put it this way. Some of the things you may think are fictional and just a figments of my imagination may indeed be true. Ooh. And some of the things you think may be true may be figments of my imagination. And that's as far as I'll go with that.
Oh, I love it. Now I need to reread it. Like, I'm like, okay, I won't start guessing live on air. Right. But
because that's part of the intrigue of the book, is that you, you know, once I tell you what is really true in that book, then it becomes something else to you. And and it starts to pull that away from the entire fabric of the story. And I need that story for you, the reader, to stay intact, because you need to get the full flavor and meaning of everything that happens along the way.
Well, another thing from my perspective, you did really well in this book, and I'd encourage folks to pick it up and read it. I have shared in previous interviews, I got some flack for this actually, that I'm not hugely into historical fiction. And I think I was doing an interview with Kim Taylor Blackmore, and we talked about it, and she actually kind of started asking me questions why. And I said, well, I feel like I'm being explained at sometimes when I'm reading historical fiction instead of being in the story. And I feel like the person stops and says, let me tell you about this dress and what that dress looked like. And I'm like, no, but something's happening. Don't stop. And so I did not have any of that with this book. This book, I didn't feel like you were explaining at me. I didn't feel like I was missing anything. I was just there. I was immersed in the story, and I wanted to see what happened to the characters. And it happened to be in the past, and it was credibly in the past, if that makes any sense.
And that's exactly what I wanted to do. And I had to be very careful about making sure I didn't say things or create scenes that didn't fit in the time period that I was in. I had to be really disciplined in making sure that I had backdrops that fit the scenes that I was making, creating. And even to the point of what people were thinking and saying at that time, what would have been important to them. That's the key of historical fiction, is making sure that you do your research to the extent that you can create those backdrops and characters in full.
Interesting. So you're saying that character motivation is going to be very different in a historical novel, because they're driven by the, like, women, for example, had very fewer options and different options at that point in time. So their character motivation needs to be driven by that set of circumstances. I've never thought about it that way.
Right. I mean, your character motivation in 1800 as a woman who is looking at, you remember the part about the sewing machine, who's looking at the sewing machine and thinking, you know, what am I supposed to do with this? But being motivated by a decision someone else made because of the time frame they are in and the world that they are living in would be very different than you going on Instagram and seeing an influencer tell you what lipstick you need to wear because of your hair color and how much better you would look if you use that certain lipstick. It's just two different worlds. And so you can't mix them if you're going to write historical fiction.
You're getting me thinking things I've never considered.
I mean, what would my characters think, care about their hair color and their lipstick when they had so many other issues? I'm not saying that they didn't like lipstick or hair color, but it wasn't their priorities like it is for some people today.
So what about writing advice? Because you are a multidisciplinary writer. I believe you're a poet, right? You've written poetry, oh, yeah. You've written short pieces. Tell us a little bit about that breadth of everything you write. And then I'd love any advice that you have for other folks who would love to take this path that you're on.
Well, you know, if you listen to your imagination and your impulses and you want to write something, it doesn't always have to be in the form of a book or a novel. Sometimes what's in you is a poem. Sometimes what's in you is commentary. And you should just let it flow in whatever form, in whatever genre it takes. And don't feel that if you write a 40-line poem, that's not sufficient for the idea that you had. And don't feel constrained by genre and people telling you that things have to line up a certain way. I think that people don't really need to be taught writing. I think people have to be taught the freedom to express themselves.
Wow, that's really powerful. And I'm going to stick that on a post-it note and think more about it. Like, why do you think we have such a hard time finding that voice to express ourselves? Like, because we're told not to, or because we don't believe in ourselves, or like, that's interesting.
I think people are so busy trying to have what other people have to be accepted. You know, that for some people, that junior high wanting to be with the popular girls at the popular girls table never goes away. You have to break out of that. If you're going to write, you can't be in that. You can't be at the popular girls table. You have to be at your own table.
I love that. Okay. I got 2 post-it notes to go on my wall out of that. You have to be at your own table. I love that. I love that. Especially as I'm writing my second book right now. So I have enjoyed talking with you and I really enjoyed the book. Thank you for writing that. It gave me such a wonderful escape.
I'm so glad you liked it and that it resonated with you. And I look forward to seeing what you're putting out there.
Thanks. It's so much work, as you know, right from the beginning to actually getting it to the world. When people ask me when it's coming, I'm like, oh, sometime.
Whenever I get it done.
If you'd like to see the video version of this interview and many others, visit bestofwomensfiction.com or follow me, Lainey Cameron, on Instagram, where I share these interviews weekly. You can also subscribe right here to the podcast.